She's sharp, pointed, and insightful. This is Stacy on the Right on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
A bill filed in the Florida House of Representatives this week would require all public high schools to offer Bible study classes. Parents could choose whether or not it's a class they'd like their kids to take.
And the minute they take Bible or goddaughters, the school will start having problems. I'm not saying it's going to solve everything.
For now, we will have to wait and see.
BuzzFeed's latest bombshell.
If true, important caveat.
How close are we getting to impeachment?
Mueller didn't do the media any favors tonight, and he did do the president one.
There was a conspiracy with the president of the United States to lie to Congress. That's the first thing Michael Cohen would have led with months ago, and it's the first thing the special counsel would have included. I never for a second thought there was anything to that BuzzFeed story, and I'm glad the special counsel corrected the record.
And now, Stacy Washington.
Oh, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here. I love it when the truth hits home with so much force that it knocks curse words out of people. Tells me I'm doing my job. So welcome to the program. Hour two of the show, we're going to have Cassie Dillon, contributor to the Daily Wire and the founder of Lone Conservative. She's going to join us and talk about the Women's March. Yeah, that happened. Also, she's going to talk about, a lot of what's been going on this last few days and news-wise, news of the day, current events, etc. If you are new to our programming, welcome home to American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. You can find out more at urbanfamilytalk.com, afr.net, and of course my website, stacyontheright.com. You can also find us on social media channels all over. So much fun. You can go to Instagram and Twitter and hit the subscribe button or the follow button or whatever if you feel so inclined. We'd love to have you there as well. We are going to discuss, continue to discuss this whole bombshell, quote unquote, report about this. It's fake news that Michael Cohen was forced to lie to Congress by Donald Trump because they had a meeting. Just the idea that they sat down and met because he was going to go testify is supposed to be something, some bombshell. And speaking of bombshells, it's a word that's been a favorite in the news media, Democrats news media of late. And when I say they've said it a lot, you don't have to take my word for it. The award-winning Washington Free Beacon did a mashup where they have CNN and MSNBC and other news outlets basically parroting the same thing over and over and over again. And it comes to a close where it's important that you listen all the way to the end. But I've sliced it into two pieces because I want you to hear just how coordinated they are. And this is what really, this is what knocks the curse words out of people. When they're listening to me talk about this and they hear facts, irrefutable evidence like this, it makes them so hopping mad that they're wrong that they start cursing. And they can't just curse to themselves because what's the point of that? They already have a negative mental image and say horrible things to themselves. They have to then spread that hate outwards. They have to share it on online social media and make other people read their profanity. My mind is not defiled and I am not sullied and my synapses will not be slowed down by your ignorance, but I will continue to educate you regardless of whether or not it hurts. And if you don't want to hear it, that's up to you, but I'm going to keep putting the truth out there. No stopping, no slowing down. This is coming at you. If you want to receive it, take it. Curse words might be knocked out of you, but you'll be the better for hearing the truth. And here is some truth that is really unfortunate for the Democrats, because if they were really reporting the news, they can actually come up with their own copy. The fact that they have to go and have everybody say the exact same thing over and over again is just more proof that they're not telling the truth. So this is a devastating new video montage, and I'm giving you the audio, of just how irresponsible the CNN, MSNBC, and other mainstream news outlets were over the BuzzFeed quote finger bombshell story on President Trump. It's number four.
A giant news story from BuzzFeed News today.
It is one of the most dramatic and potentially devastating developments.
A bombshell reporting. A bombshell.
This is a bombshell.
In this bombshell.
Bombshell. Bombshell.
Bombshell. Bombshell.
Bombshell.
Bombshell.
Bombshell.
Bombshell.
On tonight's bombshell report.
We got to get back to that bombshell.
The biggest bombshell.
BuzzFeed's latest bombshell.
Bombshell.
Damning and damaging stuff.
What may be the most damning allegation yet.
What may be the most damning report to date.
A new report so damning that if true. A story that if true.
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 If true. Important caveat.
If true, could mean the president obstructed justice.
The president's going to lose his job.
He's a game changer.
The Trump presidency would be over.
Could very well put in motion Donald Trump's impeachment.
That's fueling new talk of impeachment.
Could very well be impeachment.
Could lead to his impeachment.
Historically, it's a beeline to impeachment.
How close are we getting to impeachment?
But, yeah,
But no one else reported anything different.
This president committing a federal crime.
Let's say that one more time. Lie to Congress.
We are at a turning point here. Individual number one is in big, big trouble.
BuzzFeed's description of specific statements to the special counsel's office and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Mr. Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate.
Don't fall for what these politicians out there want you to do. They want you to think we're all crooked. We're not.
Aren't you, Brian Stelter? That is almost all from MSNBC and CNN, those clips. It's all of the people that he works with saying the exact same thing. Can you imagine going out to dinner with these people or to sit down and have coffee? You know how it is. You're on text thread together and someone says, hey, let's get together for coffee. And everybody shows up and invariably this topic's turned in the news. And these people immediately are like, well, you know the president's going to get impeached and he should be impeached. And that's all they can talk about. And so they just start repeating each other. Well, you know, Stephanie Ruhle said that this is an impeachable offense. Yeah, I know. And she's right. She's always right. Is she? Is she always right? Is it an impeachable offense? Well, first of all, did he do it? I mean, if it's an impeachable offense and he did it, then where's the Mueller report? If this story was true, then the Mueller report would be incoming. He would have already made an announcement with this new information and the conviction of Michael Cohen. We now have evidence that supports collusion and obstruction of justice on behalf of the President of the United States. And we will be bringing our report forward and presenting it to Congress and the American people. Have you heard that? All we keep hearing is this one's resigning, that one's leaving, and possibly the report is wrapping up. Remember, I first started talking about the report wrapping up before the election. Then they said right after the election because he doesn't want to impact the election. Now here we are. We've had the election. We've had Thanksgiving and Christmas. We are now back and we're in the new year and everyone's trying to address their New Year's resolutions, goals, new year, new me. You know, I'm working out. I'm not working out. I'm listening to books on audio tape. I'm reassessing my life. I'm making goals. I'm in a support group. I'm doing a new Bible study. Everybody's moved on. And Mueller is still burning through American tax dollars. And people are triggered by me saying that. You ought to be triggered by all the tax money of yours that you're paying that Mueller is just burning through. He doesn't even care that he's investigating something based on a lie. If this is the way it works, then I would imagine Republicans have operatives out there gathering opposition research documents on every single one of the people who's announced that they're running for presidency on the Democrat side. Come on with me. Let's take a walk down what if lane. If unicorns are real and Donald Trump's going to be impeached for doing nothing, then apparently all the Republicans have to do is have an opposition research document made on every single one of these candidates. And the one who gets the nomination, if they win the election, they just forward the opposition research document over to the FBI. The FBI takes it, submits it to the FISA court, gets a warrant, starts listening in, and then they'll just need a friend like James Comey to send a Columbia law professor a couple of memos. And those memos will prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And then the special counsel will investigate Kamala Harris or whoever their choice is, Bernie Sanders, whoever it is that is their nominee that wins. That's how this works now, right? I mean, if it's okay for them to try to remove President Trump and to paint him as a racist, a man who his daughter and almost all of his in-laws are Jewish, and he works with so many black people, not just in business, but now in the White House and in all of the agencies. He's a true racist isn't going to put blacks in a position of power. A true racist is proud that they think that whites are supreme, and they're going to continue to tout that and put that out front. True racists can't tolerate the presence of minorities. How do I know that? Have you ever been in the presence of a racist before? I have. Have you ever communicated with a white supremacist before? I have. There's a huge difference between someone being racially insensitive or maybe saying things that are politically incorrect, or maybe you just don't like them and so you want to call them a racist, and an actual racist. There's, oh my goodness, that's a dunderhead. That's someone who clearly doesn't know how to interact with people. And then there's pure evil. Someone who, if they could get their hands around your neck and squeeze it tight enough, they would. The only reason they're not doing it is because you've been saying on radio for years and years and years that you believe in carrying guns and you pray to the Almighty and you fear no man. That's what I'm talking about. And it's so enraging to have to sit here day after day after having countered that kind of evil, after having looked it in the eye and felt the hate and the evil emanating from it, and then have other people try to tell me about racism. It is annoying to the extreme to have been called the N-word in public and then have someone tell me that I support racists with my vote. It is annoying in the extreme to have people who support the butchering of black babies to the tune of 18 million since the passage of Roe v. Wade, supporting the agenda of eugenicist Margaret Sanger, to have people like that who are so ignorant they don't understand that racism is being deployed as a tool to silence the opposition, to have them try to lecture me on who I vote for. Please pardon me for just a moment while I give you some side eye for trying to lecture me when you support actual genocide, wiping out of a quarter of the blacks in America because we are weeds and should not exist. Poor black people shouldn't be born. That's your mantra, but you think you can lecture me about race. Pardon me while I just take a moment to consider the ineptitude of your brain synapses and the fact that you just actually support racism yourself and are projecting. Yeah, I said it. Please pardon me while I sit and consider the fact that you support Hillary Clinton, who said that black people need to be brought to heel like dogs and that blacks are natural born predators. You supported her. I didn't. You actually support Robert Byrd, who kissed Hillary Clinton on the mouth. He was a grand wizard in the Ku Klux Klan, and you support him. You support her. You support those people. So while your brain is chugging along at the pace of a snail, synapses not only not firing, but just big, huge areas of your brain that are dead and cannot work. And I'm sitting over here wondering why you think you can lecture me on race. Now, I'm not going to waste too much time wondering about why your brain doesn't work or why you think you can lecture me, because you're wasting my time. But it does beggar the idea that we have these people running around talking to us about race all the time when real problems exist, such as the Planned Parenthood issue I just brought up, or this issue with our government investigating the president when he has done nothing wrong. So here's the conclusion to this BuzzFeed audio. It's number 5.
The record of the press in reporting the Russia story is actually pretty spectacular.
They're not saying it's false. They're saying it's not the overall false.
It's not accurate. It's an old term of art for flax. It doesn't mean it's not true. It means that maybe in certain iotas, it wasn't quite true.
The story publishes, and then 22 hours later, we get this statement.
Yeah.
That's a strange, right? That's a weird fact pattern.
I think for the audience at home, I think this is even more frustrating than it was last night.
It's frustrating a bit that the statement from the special counsel did not specifically say what was inaccurate.
I think Robert Mueller's strategy of saying nothing about anything ever, even off the record, is very frustrating.
Mueller didn't do the media any favors tonight, and he did do the president one.
This is what liberals do. Something happens, there's some pushback, there's some nuance, and liberals go into this, like, backpedaling.
But I just think this is a bad day for us. You know, it reinforces every bad stereotype about the news media.
So it turns out that everything that they were saying, bombshell, this and that, bombshell, bombshell, you know, this is very, very upsetting for the president. This is it. He's finally done. Turns out it was fake news. And so they had to go on TV and whine about that. Notice the conservatives it did not curse words out of us when they were telling all those lies about the president. But y'all are cursing because I'm telling the truth here on the radio about what they're doing. We'll be back with more after this.
Maybe you've been hearing the messages from Preborn asking listeners to join together to help save babies' lives through ultrasound, and you're not sure how to respond. Here's the story of one woman who took that step.
I heard about Mission Preborn just before December of last year and asked my husband if we could give at least $140. Just last week, we received our packet. My husband came in the house and he was telling me, this is our preborn packet, the ultrasounds. I started crying without even seeing them. Not only were there five babies, but one of the moms was having twins. We were just elated for that.
For $140, you can sponsor five ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies' lives that were spared. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your sponsorship goes to saving babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
On Martin Luther King Jr. Day, let me suggest that you take some time to read his letter from a Birmingham jail. If you're young, I think it will give you a better idea of what the civil rights movement in the 1960s was all about. If you're older, it will remind you of some of the forgotten events and chapters in American history. Dr. King wrote the letter in response to a published statement by eight clergymen. He wrote it in the margins of the newspaper and later on scraps of paper and finally on a pad his attorney left for him. He answers his critics about his tactics during the civil rights movement and then makes his case for his nonviolent campaign. To those who call his action untimely, he reminds them of what it is like to be a black person in America that has seen vicious mobs lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim. He also deals with the controversial issue of just laws and unjust laws. He says a just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law or law of God. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law. Finally, he addresses the responsibility of the church. He notes that the church of the early Christians was not merely a thermometer that recorded the ideas and principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that transformed the mores of society. And when they were commanded to do something contrary to the Bible, they said they were called to obey God rather than man. This is a reference to Acts 5:29. As you read his letter, remember that he wrote it when he was 34 years old and in jail. Ask yourself how many people you know, pastors, professors, activists, who could write with such intellect and such passion. This letter by Martin Luther King Jr. is worth reading, and I trust you will consider doing so today. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
From Sky Pass Entertainment, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. The Least of These, rated PG-13, in theaters February 1st, TheLeastOfThese.movie.
Welcome back to Stacy on the Right on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome to the show today. Thank you for being here with us at American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk, AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Also find our pages on Facebook and hit the like button. We want you to be plugged in so you don't miss anything. We have fantastic programming from morning to the next morning. It's 24 hours a day, and we don't want you to miss anything. Thanks for being at home on American Family Radio. And it's my pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. It's Cassie Dillon. She's a contributor to The Daily Wire. She's also the founder of Lone Conservative. Cassie, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's talk this thing through. First, Women's March. You went? What happened?
Oh, yes. I went undercover. I was doing a video for The Daily Wire, and so I went with a pink hat on my head. I don't want to exactly use the term, what you call it. And I just interviewed people, asking them about the accusations of anti-Semitism made towards the founders. And then I also asked them what they thought the march the day before, the March for Life, I asked them what kind of people they thought would have went to it.
And I'm so afraid to ask you what they said. What did they say?
Well, on the accusations of anti-Semitism, most people either didn't care or didn't hear about it. So you have these people blindly going to this protest, not even knowing what it stands for. A lot of people didn't even hear about the accusations of anti-Semitism. And I think that says a lot about them not really caring about the protest and what it stands for. And then also, it says a lot about the mainstream media, which has refused mostly to really hammer these founders for going after or being friends with Farrakhan. I think it's really important that it's reported, and clearly it's not been enough if the participants don't even know about it.
So did they believe you, or did they just dismiss it out of hand?
Some of them didn't believe me. Some of them definitely said, oh, I heard some stuff, but you know what? That doesn't matter because we're here for women, and I don't care what they have to say. They don't speak for me. And I think that's a legitimate point to have. But so when I would come back and counter them, I would say, well, would you be friends with somebody who's friends with Donald Trump? And a lot of them would say, absolutely not. And then I would respond, well, what's the difference from, you know, liking somebody who supports a bigot and an anti-Semite like Farrakhan? And, you know, a lot of them had nothing to say when I would bring that up.
Really? No response, huh?
No response to that. They just, you know, these people are just going. I think a lot of people go just to have fun. You know, they have music, they have drums, people are dancing, people are engaging with counter-protesters. There were a lot of pro-life people there holding graphic signs. And you would see the Women's March participants kind of yelling at them and having back and forth, which wasn't very productive, in my opinion. But honestly, I think it's just going to the event, posting pictures on your social media, and trying to act like you actually give a crap about women.
So, Cassie, I want to just add that what I've noticed, especially lately, the past couple years the president has been in office, is that there's an oppositional nature to the people who like to be at these types of events. So let's just, you know, we can just kind of create channels. One channel of people that exist in America today that are Democrats, they may disagree 100% with what I believe in. You know, you and I are on the right. They would totally disagree with us, but they would never yell at us, scream at us, or attend a protest rally. They would just vote. They, or, you know, they might make a comment on Facebook, but they're not ever going to engage in yelling and screaming. But what I'm noticing is the people who show up to things are on another channel. They're on the channel where they don't care if you're 500 pounds and you're carrying a machete. If they think you're a Trump supporter, they're going to get in your face and yell. You're going to feel their spittle flying. They have no concept of their own personal safety or right and wrong, or even if they're placing themselves in danger by engaging what they call counter-protesters, people they're resisting. And that sounds like the channel of people who would attend the Women's March.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening. And I think primarily this is starting in the colleges. We saw a study come out about 2 years ago saying that the majority of college students, or maybe it was 30%, it was, you know, 30 to 60% of college students believe that it's okay to use violence in the face of hate speech. Now, what is hate speech? I don't know, and they probably don't either, but they're okay with using violence towards speech. That's really scary, and I think it's our young people right now that are getting so incited and going towards these different means of dealing with confrontation.
You know, I find that statistic interesting because I don't think they ask the correct follow-on question. Okay, so you're willing to use violence. What if your violence is met with the lawful right to carry a concealed weapon? In other words, you physically assault someone in the state of Florida or Missouri, say, and they shoot you because they have the right to understand your ground laws. Then what would you do? They never asked that.
People are just so against guns. And it's funny because, you know, today's Martin Luther King Day, and he actually applied for his concealed carry and was denied it. So these leftists aren't even supporting someone who, you know, really did think that it was important to take care of yourself and protect yourself.
Yeah, but so we haven't seen that yet. We've talked about it quite a bit here on my program and other shows. You know, I've actually done, you know, interviews on NRA TV where the subject has come up. That so most Americans who carry are so law abiding that they would rather suffer, you know, maybe some physical assault, as long as it wasn't deadly in nature. They would rather endure that than actually shoot someone in self-defense, because in their mind, they really have to be in credible fear for their life in order for them to engage in that way, which means there's this false kind of layer of assault that leftists can engage in. But you don't know where that person's coming from, the person you're assaulting, if they're going to be willing to assault you back, so to defend themselves, or to escalate because they feel that they're outmatched, to truly defend their life through the use of a firearm. And how, once you are the aggressor, the onus is on you to stop being the aggressor before the person feels their life is in danger and they have to use a firearm. This seems to be completely outside of what these people are thinking about when they agree that violence is sometimes okay and necessary and acceptable when engaging in political speech.
I think this is a really great point you're making here. I know a lot of concealed carry holders, they don't want to shoot somebody. Nobody wants to shoot somebody.
Yeah, nobody.
And so I think a lot of times it's just having the threat of you having a firearm. So somebody's trying to maybe rape you as a woman and you pull out your firearm and they run off because, you know, you can defend yourself. So I think just having the option to defend yourself is so important. And I don't think the majority of concealed carry owners, just like you said, want to shoot somebody that maybe they get punched in the face. That's not worth shooting somebody in many situations, in my opinion.
Well, getting water dumped on them. I mean, I'm of the mindset because, you know, there's the study from the CDC that says there's around 2 million defensive gun uses per year in this country. And we've seen so much violent political activity that I'm of the mindset that there have been some lawfully carrying gun owners who have been assaulted, but they've simply chosen not to respond because they had a drink dumped on them or they were forced out of a restaurant or they were, you know, jostled or maybe even punched or pushed around during some of these altercations. And it just wasn't worth unholstering a gun because their lives weren't in danger in their opinion. But that doesn't mean we won't get to a place where someone will. And I see it as it's this weird dichotomy because I'm of the mindset that I just don't ever want to be assaulting anybody. Like, that's my thing, is I just don't want to be hitting people because I don't know what people are capable of. But it's the opposite on the left. They're like, yeah, we need to get in their faces. We need to punch. We need to do whatever we need to do. Completely unaware. There's like, what, 400 to 600 million guns in this country? I always assume everywhere I go that everyone's strapped. That's my thing. I'm like, you know, probably everybody here is strapped. I have no idea. You have to govern yourself accordingly. It's not fear. It's just being prudent in the fact that that's the state of things in this country. What is going on with liberals that they never consider that?
I totally agree with that. And I've been to protests covering them where Antifa has showed up. And, you know, I really don't understand that group because they just go up to anybody and start assaulting them. Even the media, even like CNN and like liberal outlets will go and knock down their cameras, not thinking that anything bad will happen back to them. So I really don't understand these young people who just go out there and assault people and don't expect repercussions. Because there need to be repercussions. It's not okay to be assaulting people. And the more we have these protests, the more I see people getting hateful. So I went to the 2016 inauguration, and I went to the March for Life in 2017 inauguration, and I was there for the Women's March and for the March for Life. And going this week, people are a lot angrier than they were, even after President Trump was just inaugurated, in my opinion. It's getting worse.
This is the backlash against not getting their way. He was supposed to have been impeached by now, Cassie. Come on, you and I have got to catch up to the program. I'm laughing because people are so mad. Like, I just don't understand it. When I open my email up and someone is telling me that if it weren't for white people beating Christianity into me, I would be practicing voodoo right now, I laugh at that. Because you know what? I'm not an American citizen by accident. The unique circumstances that had to come about, historically speaking, since I'm descended from slaves on one side and free black Frenchmen on the other, that's no accident. So I happen to be, you know, as you know, I'm a Christian, and I believe that God preordains every step of my life. I believe in predestination. So therefore, I don't think it's an accident that I'm an American or that I'm a Christian. I just don't believe that. But when people email me stuff like that, like I have that email right now, someone says I would be practicing voodoo if it wasn't for, you know, slavery. And I thought that was so funny. I was reading it over the break. But these are the kinds of things that people are sitting around emailing and thinking, and they're engaging in that instead of, say, you know, like Nancy Pelosi won't negotiate with the president. Instead of just saying, you know what? Okay, I disagree with her on these issues, but there's got to be something we can agree on. Because I found I can agree with a liberal on an issue, especially if we go local. I can find stuff for us to agree on. I've done it every single time someone says, I hate your views. Then I'll ask them about something local, and then we find that we agree. It doesn't even take 5 minutes. Why aren't they doing that?
You know, 2 points on that. One, that email you got, that's horrible. Because not the first slaves, but, you know, our Jewish brothers and sisters were slaves in Egypt. And yes, there was slaves thousands of years later, but, you know, Christianity comes from a time or a religion where the people were enslaved. And then second, when it comes to agreeing with people, I think there's always something that you can agree upon. But I am getting afraid with the new congresswomen that we have in Congress who are just, you know, calling their fellow congresspeople, you know, names and insulting them. Like, how are you supposed to sit down and have a conversation and get legislation passed to move our country forward when you're just insulting your colleagues? I would never do that. Even when I was in college and all of my peers were liberals, I would never go and insult them. Yes, I'd criticize their viewpoints, but, you know, we're in the same classroom. We're supposed to be working together.
And also because you get much more done when you can find some common ground. So it's not about converting people so they don't disagree with you anymore. And it's not about saying you can't disagree. It's more about saying, well, we could sit here and argue, you know, like spider monkeys over this issue for days and days and days and never get anywhere. Or we could say, let's set that aside for a second. Here's some places where we can agree. How about if we, you know, kind of horse trade or negotiate on this? I'm almost like, it seems as if liberals are losing the ability to engage in that kind of discussion. And you're right about the new Congress people. They don't sound at all like legislators. They don't sound like people who are there to make legislation. And this is the first crop of new people where I genuinely feel like they've elected people who have no intention of ever bringing any legislation to the floor of the House.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I really hope that these young leftists really start putting their money where their mouth is and try to be like the Supreme Court justice they love so much. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg knew how to work with Justice Scalia. She worked with somebody on the other side. They got along. They were friends.
Mm-hmm.
If they really want to love her as much as they do, you know, they call her the notorious RBG, they should really start acting like her and try to not demonize their peers. Instead, maybe befriend them. You can disagree with somebody and still be friends.
That's what's so funny about them doing all these movies about her, Cassie. You know, the movie, the movement to kind of lionize her and turn her into her own, not just historical figure, but kind of someone that they worship. I find it interesting because there's a lot of her history, especially her, you know, her time on the Supreme Court, where the amount of time she spent with Justice Scalia, I really think if liberals knew about that, they would be baffled by it because they used to actually go to all the Federalist Society events together, and they used to go to, like, he would be invited to give a speech and she would go. She would hear him present the speech. And I have this book of his speeches where he talks about Christianity, his Catholicism, the intersection of, you know, Christian faith and public life, the law, the Anglo-Saxon basis of our law in this country. I mean, the range of subjects that he was allowed to give speeches on is stunning. And I'd say she was present for a huge number of those speeches because if she was able, she would actually go and listen to him give these speeches to these different organizations, Jewish groups, Christian groups, legal groups, you name it, law enforcement groups. He would go speak to them and she would be there too. And it wasn't just her. Sometimes the other justices would come along. It was almost like, hey, I'm going to give a speech. You all want to roll? And then everybody would be like, yeah, let me take my robe off and let's go. They hung out together. How do they reconcile that with this new normal, which is every Republican has to be a rapist and a pedophile and can't go onto the Supreme Court?
It just shows the immaturity and the devastation of our politics. Congress used to be like that, too. They would have dinner parties all the time in D.C. D.C. used to be known for dinner parties, and it's really not anymore. And Congress people from both sides would have these parties come together. And I think the last time we actually saw that was after 9/11. After 9/11, Congress came together. They were being friends with each other, but really don't see that anymore.
Well, in some ways, I'm glad they're not hobnobbing together anymore because the Democrats have an infectious capability of converting people to their way of thinking or to doing nothing that the Republicans don't seem to possess. But I do think they should at least be able to sit around a table, conference table, whatever kind of table they like, and hammer out solutions to problems like, I don't know, our open southern border or some of these other issues. And the reason that they can't do it in part is because Republicans will negotiate until the cows come home. They'll give away the farm. And Democrats just keep moving further and further to the left. And their constituents are enraged to the point of being unable to simply hear a differing opinion. And I think that's it's crazy pants. I do want to point people to the Daily Wire. It's dailywire.com. What's the website for Lone Conservative?
LoneConservative.com.
LoneConservative.com. We have Cassie Dillon with us. She's a contributor to the Daily Wire, hugely popular website, and founder of Lone Conservative. All the best stuff. Cassie, thanks for the work that you've been doing going into these kind of dangerous situations and reporting from inside the lion's den. Thank you for doing that.
Thanks so much. It's what I love to do.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show today. We'll talk to you again soon. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So Cassie Dillon, what I really appreciate about her is that she's super young. And she can throw on the anatomical hat and go into these situations and do the reporting from the inside. And I love the fact that she was asking these Women's March people these questions about their own organization and that they seem completely unaware of the controversy that's swirling at the top. Very interesting. All right, when we get back, we're going to be talking to you, if you want. 866-963-2037, 866-963-2037. More Stacey on the right after this. This is Just a Minute with Stacey Washington. In 1 Samuel 21, we see David fleeing from King Saul. David uses every trick in the book to preserve his own life, from eating the priest's holy showbread to lying about why he is in the vicinity. At one point, David pretends to be insane, thinking that doing so will prevent angry servants from killing him. Emulating these deceptions are not the point of David's story. Being in fear for his life made him do things he would not normally do. But the story doesn't end there. David wrote Psalm 34 during this difficult time, singing, "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth." This is a beautiful way of describing the true nature of walking with God. In the low times, when all have forsaken you, continue to bless the Lord. I'm Stacey Washington. Find out more at StaceyOnTheRight.com.
Family is an institution set forth by God, one man and one woman for life, with the outflow being children produced by that union. It's obvious to all that there is an attack on the family in our country, and especially on fathers. Whether it's the cycle of sin that persists in our families or the pressure from our government to exclude men from being intimately involved, the strategic battle is on for the souls of men. Join us in the battle to strengthen fatherhood. UrbanFamilyTalk.com.
My wife came home and told me that she was leaving me. At that point, I started trying meth. I realized what I was doing to myself, and I came to Adult and Teen Challenge. My life is completely turned around, and I know that's all to the grace of God.
If you or a loved one are struggling with addiction, Adult to Teen Challenge can help. There are centers across the country, and you can find the one nearest you at 855-END-ADDICTION or at teenchallengeusa.com. This is Urban Family Talk.
This is Poll Parade with Fox News Director of Polling, Dana Blandon.
If all goes as planned, Donald Trump will give his State of the Union address next week. Immediately afterward, there will be polls telling us what Americans thought of his speech. Well, at least they will claim to do that. Here are a couple of things to consider. Lots of these instant polls are done by online publications looking for clicks. They encourage readers to opt in. These are really just for entertainment. Anytime people pick themselves to participate in a survey, it can't be a true measure of public opinion. They only tell you the views of those internet users who are also fans of that site. Scientific polls, which are still mostly done by calling both landlines and cell phones, those are good at measuring initial reactions of speech watchers. However, they are still a snapshot of what the audience thinks, and those speech watchers represent just a small portion of the public. Also, remember that speech watchers are more likely to be from the president's own party, and that kinder reception will be reflected in the results. I'm Dana Blanton, and that's your Poll Parade.
You can download episodes of Stacey on the Right from the podcast page on AFR.net or UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Now, back to the show on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
The most painful concession for me to make as a Democrat who ran against this kind of stupidity and fear would be money for a border wall. If you want me to consider something like that, I need to see comprehensive immigration reform. I need to see an end to the cruelties of the last 2 years. If President Trump wants border security on his terms, I've got to see America restored as a welcoming country of immigrants and refugees, not just protection for the dreamers who are but a small fraction of the victims of this president's immigration.
But permanent protection for a border wall, and I know the details would have to be worked out, but permanent protections for a border wall is something you would at least talk about.
I would talk about it if we expanded it so that it's really a big deal. If we give President Trump everything that he wants as a border wall, I want to see immigration reform on the table. I want to see raising the refugee cap.
So this guy, some Democrat, who cares what his name is, says, in order to give just $5.7 billion in border wall funding, which they call permanent wall. I don't know why the wall now is called permanent, where the other walls weren't called permanent. All the other walls that have been built, the sections, they're still there. And the money that they've previously voted for has been to maintain those sections of wall. I just want to make sure people understand that. And I don't say, do you understand that? Because I understand the intelligence level of this audience. I respect it greatly. But we have to kind of get, we have to parse the language we're hearing from the Democrats, because they're so good at distorting what has actually occurred. We have built sections of wall, as you heard Brandon Darby talk about here on the show, sections of wall near major cities and heavily populated areas. We have not built wall in the sections that are desert or, you know, the more the areas that are really dangerous to traverse. So he says he wants to see an end to the cruelties of the last 2 years, but he's lying about that. There are no new cruelties. These are the same things that have been going on since the Flores decision was made in 1996. 1996, the Flores decision said you can't have these people held longer than 22 days and you can't hold adults and children together in the same facilities, even if they're parent and child. And you also have to determine if these are actually their children. And if they're not, you have to separate them. So that, you know, an acknowledgement of the human trafficking. This person's lying to you when he says an end to the cruelties of the past 2 years, an increase in the refugee caps. We already accept more refugees than every other country in the world. And we are higher per capita than any other country. Why would we need to increase the refugee caps? Because these are their voters, they think. Now, I believe that God is in control, and I believe that some of the people who move here to this country, the Democrats think they're automatically going to be their voters. But if these people, like, let's say they're Syrians, and they were professionals in Syria, and they come here, and they're starting over again, the first thing they want to do is get into a neighborhood that somehow approximates what they left before their country was destroyed. So they want to be in a middle-class neighborhood if they were middle-class. They want to live a middle-class lifestyle. And once they start living and working in America and seeing how free it is and how organized it is and how you don't have to, you know, buy things. Like, in other words, you go to a government agency, you don't have to, like, take and bribe the person who's giving you a permit. You just have to pay the fee. And when they see that that's how this country works, then they're like, wait a minute now. So I'm not automatically a Democrat. So Syrians and other refugees from other foreign countries are not automatically Democrats. And if we cede that to them and we don't speak to these people, these future voters, then we as, you know, Republicans, conservatives, whatever, are really missing the boat. But he says for the permanent border wall, we have to have true immigration reform. And you know what? I agree with this Democrat guy. I want to see an end to chain migration. You don't automatically get to bring every sick relative to the 18th degree to America just because we said you could come in. How about if we lower the lawful immigration that we're going to actually have in this country? That's what voters want. They want less lawful immigration, and they want an end to illegal immigration. If you're talking about border wall funding, if he wants all of those concessions, a permanent solution to DACA, a permanent solution to DACA is to give them work permits and to make them lawful permanent residents, but they can never vote. So we'll give them that. And we'll also say that any person in future who's brought here as a child against their free will does not get the same, they're treated as any other illegal immigrant to deter people from doing this again. Also, if we're going to make all of these concessions and do true immigration reform, then what we should also do is, you know, fund the border wall completely and have it completed before the end of the president's first term. I mean, this is called negotiation. It's called, you know, getting things done. And, you know, I know it's knocking the curse words out of some folks, but I think it sounds pretty logical because not because these are my ideas, but because the president proposed these things before. And the uniparty portion of our elected government would totally rail against that because it derails their cheap influx of labor. And as hard as it is for us to accept, as Christians, we have to be disillusioned and we have to know that we're dealing with depraved human beings, of which we all are without a savior. There are Americans who have some modicum of power, people who maybe have money or influence, who don't mind the human trafficking. They don't mind the sex trade. They're making money off of it. They don't mind the drug trade. They're getting a cut of that. They're not interested in how many blacks or Hispanics are killed in inner cities fighting over drug turf. They feel like, hey, you got involved in the drug war, you get killed, that's your own business. But I'm making money off of this thing right here. Americans want drugs, and I'm going to make sure I'm a part of getting them to them because that's a lot of money I can make. These are people that exist in this world, and we can't ignore the fact that they're there. But we have a weapon against this. First of all, it's that we have to be praying specifically for these evils to be brought to justice. And second of all, we have to be praying for the president, that he would be wise and that he would be able to negotiate and that the Democrats would actually come to the table. I don't like seeing the government shut down. I know there's been some, you know, a little bit of slight controversy about me saying that I want them to draw down the number of federal employees. I do. I want people who currently work for the federal government who could be employed in the private sector. I want them to go to the private sector. I don't think all of them will, but I think it would be great to see a significant number go into the private sector. Why? Because private sector jobs actually go to the GDP and they produce a tangible benefit to us, where government work en masse, it does not have the same impact. This is the reality that we find ourselves in, where we see people going to the camera and spouting off all these lies. And why do you think people feel like they can lie with impunity and they don't have to tell the truth? Why do you think that it's so prevalent now as opposed to before, where people would get found in a lie in the news media, regardless of what they were politically, they would call the person out on it because it was a sense of honor. It was a sense of duty among the news media to basically clench liars and bring them down. And that we don't have that anymore. When Democrat elected officials get on TV and lie, the news media folks are, do they just sit there and nod? Because they're down with it. They're like, I hope people are believing this drama. I know it's not true, but I hope they're believing it. Well, I tie it to this other news story, and we teased this a little bit in the first hour, and I want to get to it before the end of today's show. This story is actually over on the Daily Mail from the UK. They're reporting on the rise of Satanism in America. Now, their caveat on the story is that members don't actually worship the devil, but they push activism. I mean, I can remember being younger and telling my mom, oh, I was at so-and-so's house after school, and she asked me if I wanted to play with a Ouija board, and my mom would stop what she was doing. If she was cooking, she would put the spoon down, and she would turn around, and she would wheel on me, and she would, did you do it? And no, I didn't play with it because you told me I wasn't allowed. You are never going over to her house again. What is her name? And so she would find out who the child was. She would be like, oh, I know her parents, or oh, I've never met her parents, yada, yada, yada. You don't play. And then she would go through the reasons why you don't play around with the devil. And I mean, she was so serious about it. It was just something that she put on me. And so we're the same with our kids. And you have to be the same with your kids and your grandkids. You have to tell them, don't do this. Don't play around in the spirit world. So I don't care if they say they're actually worshiping the devil or not. The fact that they claim that they're Satanists and they say, hail Satan, that's all I need to hear to know that this is a bullet train straight to where they don't want to go. So it's about 6 years ago, adorned in black capes with curved devil horns, little headbands or whatever, holding posters and black American flags and shouting, hail Satan, on the steps of government institutions from Arkansas to Florida to Oklahoma and Detroit. The antics and declarations of these folks seem like a hoax to many people, onlookers, journalists, politicians alike, until it became apparent that members of this newly formed satanic temple were here to stay. Now, it's a sign of the times. It's a sign of the groaning of creation and the prevalence of evil in our society, that it's where we are. Read up on it for yourself. Crack open Revelation. The Bible says that people who read Revelation, share it with others, or listen to it being read will be blessed. And that is because it is the roadmap for the last days. You have to read it for yourself. Don't be afraid of it. It is enlightening. It is so good to read. It is health and life to your bones. Get it, open it up, read it. Get the CD, listen to it on CD. We have it on CD. That's what this whole satanic temple is about. That's what this is about. The founding in 2012 has precipitated a growth. They were just a handful of members. Now there are tens of thousands with chapters all over the U.S. and across the globe, from Stockholm to London to Los Angeles to Texas. And their pranksterism, as filmmaker Penny Lane first considered it, has given way to a well-conceived ethos forming an organized quote finger religion for quote finger a group of contrarians opposed to any organization at all. They're becoming more and more firmly established across the United States, largely composed of individuals who don't even worship Satan in the first place, but center on a different interpretation of biblical teachings. They actually want to be painted as an unlikely religion that challenges even the preconceived notions of the director of the religion himself. And they have a feature-length documentary, about them. And this is what I want to say to you. You know, there are always going to be people who are attracted to the darkness, who the evil in their heart makes them want to rail against God and shake their fist in the air, and they'll even turn to, you know, quote unquote, worshiping the devil. But we have an answer to that, and it is the true practice and discipleship of Jesus Christ. We're his disciples. We're out discipling others. We are walking out our faith on a daily basis, and we're standing against this type of evil. And the other thing that we can do is, I know there are international houses of prayer all over this country. If you want to be a part of pushing back against this, the mode is prayer. That is where we are in wartime mode, and we are doing battle, and we are getting the most done. And gathering together with the saints to pray is the most effective way of getting that done. Whether you're doing prayer in your home as a prayer group or a Bible study, whether you're going to church, I encourage you to go to your church when they have prayer meetings. Whether you find the International House of Prayer that is closest to you and go there, and they're usually open 24 hours a day, you can just go right in and pray. Any of those things. But that's what we have to do, is engage in active participation, which is prayer. The prayer of the saints availeth much. We have to do it. This group is growing because the church is pulling back. God does not call us to pull back. He doesn't call us to be meek and mild when we're talking about the gospel. He says we are his warriors. We're a royal priesthood clothed in white. We are courageous, and we have the mind of Christ. We are able to do all things through Christ who strengthens us. He never says, pull back, you can't do it, you're weak, you're not able to. No, he says, go out and disciple the nations. Go spread the gospel and share what I've taught you. Bring others into the kingdom. And that's what we have to do. These people are confused. Some of them are intentionally evil, but others are just, they want to be, you know, they want to be on the cool, hip, new thing. And Satanism sounds like it's much more cutting edge than dried up old Christianity. And so they think they're doing something. They're doing something. They're paving their way straight to hell. But we don't have to allow that. We don't have to allow the proliferation of this false religion. Not today, Satan. We can definitely push back on it. But it takes us committing to prayer. It takes us committing and saying, I'm doing this. I'm getting this done. I'm obedient. I'm lining myself up with what God has for me. I'm praying. I'm praying for my country. I'm praying for my city, for my town. I'm praying for my neighborhood. I'm praying for my neighbor. I'm praying not just for my family, but for that family over there that I know they're hurting, or for that family over there, I have no idea what's going on with them, but I'm still going to pray for them. That's what we have to be doing. So I encourage you, the resource that I always point to, always, always, always on this show, I point to this book. And please don't email me and tell me that you've heard of it before and you're tired of me talking about it, because I don't want to hear that either. I am absolutely not going to allow people who disagree with what I'm saying to influence what I say on this program. So you're wasting your time if you're emailing me telling me not to say Growing in Prayer by Pastor Mike Bickle. Get this book on Amazon. Read it from cover to cover. It's the Encyclopedia Manual to Prayer, superseded only by the Bible. This book will help you target your prayers, and it will teach you things about prayer that maybe you didn't know. And if you don't need the book, if you already have a resource, good for you. All I'm asking you to do is to obey God's word, which tells us to pray so we can fight back against all of the evil, including the Satanists. Good evening from the heartland, citizens. Thank you for being at home at American Family Radio. We'll be back with you tomorrow.